This is The Takeaway. I'm WNYC's Shamita Basu in for Tanzina Vega. When we think about capital punishment, it's often through the lens of the people who are killed by the state, not the ones who carry out the killings. But a new death row drama called Clemency provides an unusual perspective into state-sanctioned executions.
How do you keep doing it?
I do my job. You want to believe there's good guys and bad guys. And I'm one of the bad guys. But I give these men respect, Marty. All the way through.
What you heard there was a clip from the film where prison warden Bernadine Williams is talking to the lawyer of an inmate on death row.
You can't save the world.
Yeah. That's a problem.
Clemency takes a deep dive into a prison warden's life. It examines what it's like to be a black woman in charge of sending men to their death, and how those carrying out state-sanctioned killings are often left traumatized and isolated. Tanzina Vega recently spoke with the film's writer and director, Chinoye Chukwu, who became the first black woman to win the U.S. Dramatic Grand Jury Prize at Sundance Film Festival, where Clemency premiered this year. They were joined by Oscar nominee Alfre Woodard, who co-produced the film and stars as the warden. Chinoye started by telling Tanzina why she chose to present the world of capital punishment from a warden's perspective.
Well, I was inspired to tell this story the morning after Troy Davis was executed. Hundreds of thousands of people around the world protested against his execution, including a handful of retired wardens who collectively had overseen hundreds of executions in their careers. And they urged the governor of Georgia to grant Troy clemency, not just on the grounds of his potential innocence, but they spoke to the emotional and psychological toll killing him would have on the prison staff sanctioned to do so. And so the morning after he was executed, I, like many other people, were kind of navigating a complexity of emotions, anger, fear, or frustration and sadness. And I just thought, if we're kind of all feeling this way, what must it be like for the people who had to take his life? You know, what is it like for your livelihood to be tied to the taking of human life? And I was just obsessed with that question and thought that it would be a really fascinating, complex exploration of the humanities at stake when it comes to mass incarceration and capital punishment if I tell the story through the perspective of the perpetrator of the system.
We also know that black and brown Americans are disproportionately incarcerated in this country more than white Americans are. Why did you decide in casting Alfre to have a black woman play the role of the warden, Bernadine Williams?
I mean, really, why not? I didn't think beyond that. It just made all the sense in the world to me. Most of the wardens who I spoke with or interviewed over my years of research were black women. And so what we see representationally in media is something, from what my observations, was quite different. And so I just thought that that would further add to the complexity of the narrative and actually would be quite authentic.
Alfre, you are, and starring in the film as the warden Bernadine Williams, you're caught between having a lot of power and yet at the same time feeling almost helpless in the role. How do you think Bernadine's character helps viewers understand the role of wardens in the prison system?
I think, first of all, we see her as a human being because most of us never have the opportunity to go into a prison and especially to see the warden. So we have no idea who those people are. I was surprised that any woman, not just a black woman, would be a warden, because I had that sort of dramatic, romanticized ogre image of a prison warden. And so to be taken, Chinoye took me on a prison tour in Ohio, but to meet the women that I met and to be a little bit just surprised and having to keep that surprise out of my eyes, because they were women that, you know, would be in my book club or at a church or a synagogue, and they were very calm. And there was all this revelation happening. I was thinking, if I am a person that has been around in the world, all levels of circumstance of people in the world, and educated, and I didn't know that, I would assume that the vast majority of Americans didn't know that. So that made me really want to get her story out, but to get it out through her eyes, her point of view. And that's where her humanity would show And people would see, oh, that might be my cousin. That might be my friend I went to college with. That might be a neighbor. And then to understand the weight of the responsibility of ritualistically taking the life of someone that basically is your coworker after years of trying to exhaust their appeals, because that's the person you deal with every day. That's an intimate relationship. So it is so damaging for the people that work on death row.
And to that point, there's this tension between the sort of rote duties of the warden, which are, you know, talking about what your last meal is going to be, talking about sort of reading out rote descriptions of what inmates should expect in the lead up to their death, things that have to happen, that have to get checked off. And yet there's this almost PTSD that the character develops in dealing with this. How did you prepare for the emotional burden that this film represents?
When we took that trip and people allowed us into their lives, we met with, I think, three wardens and a deputy warden, the women. We had meals with them. We met with the director of corrections, and we met with a man who has probably taken more people through the process than anyone in the world, who later became a staunch anti-death penalty campaigner. He actually choreographed our two execution scenes for the film, and having a meal with him. What you're doing is witnessing as an artist, you especially as an actor, you're present. You're not just hearing, saying, oh, how do you do this? You don't ask all of that. You get with the person, you walk with them, you listen to them, talk to other people, you feel them. We're inhaling so many aspects of what we would use to play that musical score, to hit that note that your filmmaker wants with a clear tone. So once you get back, and let me add, having the privilege of having a conversation with two condemned men, and I say privilege because if your time is limited, to agree to talk to two women from alleged Hollywood, all of that is witnessing, gathering. So when I show up, all I had to do was stay focused. The plot is there, but I brought all of them with me.
You know, Troy Davis was executed by the state of Georgia in 2011. Over the past 8 years, how has your research and work in this field of clemency evolved? What have you learned about clemency in particular when it comes to not just inmates, but inmates of color in particular in the United States? And how had that changed your approach to writing this script?
When I decided that I wanted to tell this story, I knew absolutely nothing about prisons or capital punishment or really what clemency meant, and that it means so much more than a stay of execution. There are different kind of tiers to it. And so I learned so much, not just about clemency, but about the prison system and the prison industrial complex and how incredibly difficult it is to get someone out of corrective control once they're in it, regardless of innocence or guilt, how self-perpetuating the system is, and how that there are so many systemic ills that could be dismantled or prevented so the prison population can be significantly reduced. And so I learned a lot about how rare clemency is, how hard it is to fight for it. And I also, in some strange way, got a renewed appreciation for life. Like, I remember reading Troy Davis's, it started out as an autobiography, and then when he was executed, his legal team and his family took over the writing of the book. I remember reading a passage where he was talking about how no matter who executes him, nobody could really take the light away from him. And I've talked to quite a few people who are incarcerated who have been forced to learn how to embody a level of light inside of them and freedom inside of them that a lot of people I know who've never been behind prison walls don't even embody. And so that's definitely expanded me, and my capacity for empathy and compassion has exponentially expanded.
There's a lot of activism more recently around controversial death sentences in general. Here on The Takeaway, we recently talked about the case of Rodney Reed, the arguments that were made in support of his innocence shortly before he was set to be executed by the state of Texas. There are protesters in the film that are fighting for Woods. How do you see their role and your role in the film sort of playing out?
When the victim's family comes to appeal to the warden, to Bernadine, they want to bring the victim's son to the execution, but they can only have so many people to come. Bernadine, what she does is she sticks to protocol. She doesn't make allowances. You'll see different points in the film. She says, I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's against the protocol. And you think, that is heartless. How can you do that? What's it going to hurt? But she also says, I've got 1,000 people in here that I'm responsible for their lives to keep them safe. And the truth is, if you don't have protocol, one drop stitch, that whole thing can come unravel. So I learned about women and men who are able to do that and hold the line. And in a sense, that is compassion as well. And most of the women we met came from mental health or social work. So they know how to do that. They know how to not get emotional because they've seen so much more than we'll ever see. When she says to them, when the victim's mother says, those people are out there yelling, why don't you, you know, this is awful. And she says, you know, that's state property. I can't do anything about that, which is true. But also, I think it helps her, Bernadine, to know that there are people out there raising the ruckus, bringing attention, because she's waiting for that phone call as much as anybody else, because it's another stain on her soul if they have to go through with it, her and the entire prison staff, the death row staff. So I think, I would like to think, she's hoping the way that I would hope that the activists in all realms keep up their agitation and their, so that the public can keep it in their minds and talk about it, because something might trigger, what they're doing could trigger that governor to make that call and say, let's stop it and let's review this.
And as much as she has to hold the line, Bernadine is not just a warden. She also has a personal life. She's a wife. And there's almost this tension where she's keeping a lot of this stress tucked under the surface, right? How does that translate into her home life?
Just like a lot of professions that only a certain type of personality can hold down that spot, they have trouble when they come home. You can love a person. You have to compartmentalize almost. You can love a person. You can be gregarious. You have fun, all that. But you can't talk to the person that you feel the closest to on earth. You can't talk about what has happened in the day necessarily. Do you know what happened on the set, in the office, at the school today? They don't have that because they haven't even consciously processed what it means to take the life of a person that you have known and have said to them, I will take you all the way through this with dignity. That's my contract to you. And so you do keep things inside. That's why a lot of people in professions, in duties, one of the things that I was attracted to in Chinoye's film is that it's pivotal that she shows Bernadine, and Wendell Pierce plays Jonathan, the husband. And it's not just, oh, we're having a fight, the way it's cut to the chase. It is a real sort of look at grown-ups who have a marriage and how you work it out, the commitment. It's not like you just turn and run and there's no bad guys there. But it's an example of whatever career or profession you're in, it's what makes marriages work and letting people know that it is work.
Chinoye, to round this out, a lot of that work, a lot of what we see in the film is often muted. There's a use of space and sound, or lack thereof, that's guiding viewers through the intensity of the story. What was your thought process there? Was it to sort of let the audience interpret the feelings and what was happening?
Yeah, my intention was never to tell audiences how to feel. I wanted to make an unsentimental film that is so firmly rooted in humanity. And I wanted the humanities of each character to evolve and unfold in real time in some moments as organically as possible, and really give space to each character, each person in the film, space to just live and breathe on screen and let the audience feel that. I also was intentional about playing with time, because the idea of time in a prison space means something very different when you are serving a life sentence, when you have been just given a death warrant and you know you have up to 30 days, when you are seconds away from being executed. And so I really wanted to play with and manipulate the idea of time.
Chinoye Achiuku is the writer and director of Clemency, and Oscar nominee Alfre Woodard stars as the warden Bernadine Williams. Thanks to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.